This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast. I'm joined by Jason King. Jason's in Florida at the beach, and they're about to head out for the beach for the day. So, Jason, first of all, thank you for doing this. Today we're going to talk about Mark Vidal, and we're just going to give a scouting report on each player on the Baylor roster as we try to build excitement for this 2020-21 season, where Baylor's not only a favorite to win the Big 12 championship, but a national championship as well. So I know Mark Vidal is one of your favorite guys. Let's just talk about him for 10 or 15 minutes and what he brings to the table. What have you seen?
Well, you know, we can talk numbers and X's and O's and things like that all day, but what I like the most about Mark Vidal and the thing that makes him probably one of my favorite Baylor players of all time is just the energy that he brings to a game and the tone he sets, you know, the joy that he plays with out there, I think is infectious. You know, when those guys are on the court, I think it's infectious in practice and in the locker room. And you know, Mark Vidal he's made it cool to, you know, look past the first couple of lines of the stat sheet. You know, he's in terms of, you know, when you're reading the stat sheet, a lot of times you look to see how many points someone scored, and then you stop. And sometimes you don't keep reading to the right, you know, where the assists are listed and the rebounds are listed and the blocks, you know, and the steals. I mean, and you know, he's a stat sheet filler, and he's made it kind of cool to embrace that role. And you know, I think that's what has really changed him as a player and created his persona. Is, you know, not only does he do all those things, he embraces it. He takes as much pride in a block as he does a dunk. He takes as much pride in an assist or in a defensive stop, you know, as he does, you know, his point total. And I think, you know, once he did that and came to that or got to that place mentally, I think it changed him as a player. And in a lot of ways, it changed Baylor's program.
Yeah, I agree. If you look at the stats alone, and you know, a lot of people just look at stats, they'll see that as a redshirt freshman, you know, he averaged like 7 points, six rebounds. Last year, he averaged only 6 points, six rebounds. But, you know, it just doesn't measure the worth and the improvement that he's had, you know, as a player. You know, I think the biggest thing is wins. You know, NIT team is redshirt freshman year, and then, you know, a team the last year that was going to be a number one seed, and he's a huge reason why. His turnovers have gone down a lot. You know, he was 2.1 turnovers per game as a redshirt freshman, and last year only 1.4. So there's been a lot of improvement, but defense, I mean, he's gone from, you know, a guy that's maybe foul prone and makes, you know, questionable defensive decisions when he was a younger player, always played hard, but now he's just one of the most disciplined, you know, one-on-one ball defenders in the country. He's a tremendous defender. And, you know, I think him and Marcus Garrett are going to be two. And Davion Mitchell, I mean, Baylor's got two of the three probably going to be, you know, top five defenders in college basketball next year. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you just look at stats, you just don't appreciate his value. But if you look at the totality of a game and you see how much effect he has on the game, he's just a, you know, really invaluable player. And you know, if Baylor has, you know, the success they think they're going to have next year, he's going to be a huge part of it.
Yeah, and that's why I think, you know, Mark Vidal, I think more than any player on Baylor's roster, is the guy that gets praised by opposing coaches, you know, in post-game press conferences, whether it's Chris Beard or Bob Huggins or Mike Boynton. I mean, you always hear these coaches just rave about, you know, how important he is to Baylor and how Baylor's team success, you know, a lot of the time, you know, really hinges on how he plays and performs. And you know, that says a lot to me, because I think coaches watch the game with a different eye than the common fan sometimes, and they can really appreciate the little things. And that's what Mark Vidal does. I think it's really, too, a credit to Baylor's coaching staff. You know, Mark Vidal entered Baylor as a, you know, a pretty solid, strong recruit, but was not a guy that maybe commanded the headlines like some other guys that they've signed. And, you know, they redshirted him and, you know, really developed him. I think he was pretty raw, you know, when he came in. Obviously a tremendous athlete. I mean, the highlight reel dunks on YouTube of him in high school are insane, but the fact that they've developed him into such a complete player really says a lot about just, you know, the development that the staff does. And I think a key was, you know, giving him tapes a year or two ago, or bringing him into the office and making him watch tapes of Dennis Rodman. And, and kind of putting that in his head, saying this is the kind of player you can become. And look, it's cool to be a rebounder. It's cool to be a defensive stopper and a guy that, you know, maybe only scores 6-7 points a game but does all these little things. And I think he really bought in and embraced that. And you know, he likes to call himself the villain. You know, he likes to make people mad during the game. He likes to get under people's skin by playing constant, you know, by putting on constant defense pressure and just getting up people the whole game. I mean, and it's worked well for him. And and like I said, indirectly, that's played a huge role in Baylor's success.
Yeah, Mr. 95%. That's another, you know, moniker that he likes. It's, you know, 95%.
I think it's 95 feet. Right? Oh, is it 95 feet or not, Mr.? Is it?
Well, maybe
I find the baseline. I thought it was like we're gonna play the full league or something.
I thought it was always like 95% of the game of basketball is and when you don't have the ball in your hands. I always thought that was a reference, but you may be right. You may be right.
You know, both of them sound pretty good. I think he does both of those things. But yeah, you could be right. I may be off on that, but either way, yeah, he likes to go by that moniker too. And again, those were seeds, I think, that were planted, you know, by Baylor's staff. Gosh, why is the name escaping me? Actually, you know, the assistant that he worked so closely with, that just came on staff a year or two ago.
Oh,
he
Peterson,
called him Yoda.
Bill Peterson. Yeah.
Yeah, he says that's my, you know, that's the guy that really has kind of mentored him, I think, the most, and really taken him under his wing. So,
right.
So credit to him.
Yeah, and you know, I think that as we look to what he can improve on, you know, obviously everybody has pro aspirations, and you know, he's a guy that in order to play in the NBA, he's going to have to be able to make, you know, 3-point shots. He's going to have to be able to shoot better than 42% from the free throw line. So if, you know, if he's wanting to get that opportunity, PJ Tucker is a guy that he referenced a lot. He, you know, kind of models his game after PJ Tucker.
Uh-huh.
You know, and PJ Tucker only made 2 threes at Texas his entire career. So I think, you know, that's an interesting comparison because, you know, everyone says, well, you are what you are. But we've seen so many examples, like Quincy Acey, for example, was not a 3-point shooter in college. And you know, he had a year in the NBA where he made over 100 threes. I mean, you have to adapt your game. And I think that, you know, if he can, you know, make over 30% from three, and if he can shoot closer to 70% from the free throw line, then I think that really opens up a lot of opportunities for him professionally.
Yeah, it does, and I think PJ Tucker is the perfect guy to look at. I do just really worry though, you know, about his free throw shooting. I mean, he's about to enter his fifth year of college, and you just, you know, you would think it would have gotten a little bit better by then. Well, and let me rephrase, it has gotten better. I mean, it's improved. You know, at least I think I'd have to look at the statistics. It feels like it improved quite a bit last season, but I mean, it still has to get a lot better.
Well,
the 3-point thing, obviously, as well, but that's what could really limit him, I think. But the guy's going to make money, you know, playing basketball somewhere for a long time if he chooses and if he keeps his head on straight, because there's a lot of money to be made overseas. But I want to see him get a shot in the NBA, you know, and I think he's got to get his shot. But let's just keep our fingers crossed that free throw shooting gets better.
Yeah, athletically, he's there. I mean, obviously, the game with the NBA is so much of a spread the court, and you got to have guys that can, you know, make, you know, outside shots. And so I, you know, he's going to have to improve in that area, but I, you know, he has big hands, and a lot of times the guys that have these really large hands have more trouble shooting, you know, free throws and outside shots.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's plenty of examples that go against that. Kawhi Leonard is one for sure. And, you know, so I mean, it's a goal that I know he has well in mind, and I know he's been working hard on that. You mentioned, you know, Chris Beard, Bob Huggins, you know, these opposing coaches that really praise him. I remember a game after his sophomore year where Baylor beat West Virginia and Waco, and Mark Vidal was dominant in that game. And Huggins, you know, after the game, he said something along the lines of, you know, well, that Mark Vidal, you know, was he a senior? And somebody said, no, he's only a sophomore. And he kind of had this look of despair on his face. And he's like, I got to deal with this guy 2 more years. And he said, well,
yeah.
He said, and his quote was, you know, well, that may be the first MVP of the Big 12 that has averaged under 10 points a game, you know, because I mean, that's, you know, obviously Bob Huggins and other coaches truly understand the value that this guy brings to the table. And I think just a compliment to, you know, how crucial of a player he is for Baylor's success.
Yeah. The only thing that bothers me about that is, I agree with him absolutely, but they always say that. And then the all Big 12 team comes out and he's on the second team,
right,
all Big 12.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, put your money where your mouth is and vote the guy first team all league. I mean, to me, he was a first team all league player last year, you know, and it, you know, because I agree with these coaches. I mean, you've got to look beyond his points and you got to look at how he impacts the game. I mean, look at when they beat Butler last year. Wasn't it the Butler game?
And yeah.
Man, he barely scored in that game.
Stopped Kamar Baldwin.
Gosh, he did. Yeah, at the end there. And he did so many great things throughout that game.
And,
you know,
people forget that game. I mean, that game was, you know, trending bad. But there was a play right before he stopped Kamar Baldwin on that you know, game, potential, you know, game-winning drive for Butler, where he was running the court and, you know, got a pass and you know, had to kind of adjust in midair. And instead of trying to dunk it, you know, he laid it up at the last second. But that was one of the last buckets Baylor had too. I mean, you know, so it wasn't just defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an offensive contribution as well that really swung the tide of that game. 100%.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, and I think a lot of times with these all league, and also he played really well in that loss at the end of the year at West Virginia this past season when he was
hurt.
He was hobbled, and I loved that game from him because, you know, he wasn't 100%, but I mean, Matthew Meyer was out, Tristan Clark didn't play. They were so, you know, and he was getting screwed on some foul calls, but still just went out there and just busted his butt and played with so much passion. And I just think he really loves playing the game. You know, at the end, they were, when he fouled out, they were doing the left, right, left to him, and he was just kind of soaking it all in, saying, bring it, I don't care, heckle me. You know, he feeds off of that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of times these all-league teams, I mean, I think a lot of times the sports information directors are voting for their coaches, you know, when it comes to the coaches all-league team. And then when it comes to the ones that are picked by the sports writers, you know, we've seen more in the last couple of months what doofuses are in that industry. I used to be one of them. Of course, I wasn't a doofus. But, you know, I mean, you got people out there that have no business, you know, voting for some of these awards that they're just looking at stats. You know, you just – my point is, you should never like judge a player based on these all league teams and stuff. I mean, because you just don't know who's voting sometimes. I mean, so you know, watch it and come to your own conclusions. But that being said, I mean, I would like to see him, you know, get a little more recognition at times. And what was really cool was to see him be named, you know, one of the top three defensive players in America, or top four. That was a quite an honor.
Yeah, I mean, do you think sometimes, like with Mark Vidal, so. You know, they talk about guys that can guard 1 through 4, but it's rare when you have a guy that can guard 1 through 5, and he certainly can guard 1 through 5. You know, I think that the analogy I always like to give, you know, to make it in football terms, is he's, you know, when you have a great offensive line, you often never hear about how great it is. I mean, the football purist will appreciate it. But, you know, the average fan's going to look at the stats that the quarterback and the running back and the wide receiver put up. And usually it's a result of the offensive line, right? I mean, and it's the same thing with Mark. I mean, Mark's ability to, you know, be physical and to wear out, you know, other teams, players, and just can, you know, be one of the best offensive rebounders in college basketball. And you know, the mental drain that it takes on another team when, you know, there's three straight possessions for a team, you know, like Baylor, because Mark Vidal's gotten two offensive rebounds and kept possessions alive. You know, those things really help, you know, the Maceo Teagues and the Jared Butlers shine, you know, because, you know, he's doing a lot of the hard work and the physical work to kind of free them up to you know, do their thing and to stay fresh. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I've got to think that as a teammate, I mean, you love playing with a guy like that. You know what I mean? I not that I was ever a good player, but what a great guy he would be to have on my team. I mean, I remember last year, one of my favorite Mark Vidal moments in a game, and there's a million of these, but I just happened to be watching him at this moment. Yeah, they were playing at Texas. They didn't play well at all that game, at least offensively. You know, they played great defense, but right. I think they allowed 44 points that game or something. But yeah, he blocked. I remember he blocked a shot on one end and then fired ahead, like, in transition, and Teague ended up hitting a three. And, like, but the minute he blocked that shot and passed it, he just, like, got his fist and just put it to this huge, like, fist pump and scream at the crowd. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I don't know. It was just cool. You know what I mean? Because he knew, he didn't even run down the court. He, like, blocked it, passed it up. I think there was one more pass to Teague in the corner, and he hit a three, or maybe it was Butler. Either way, but just by those pumping his fist. I don't know. I love it when he pumps his fist and screams. I don't know. I just think it's cool. It's just a cool moment to me because it's usually after a steal or a block or a rebound.
Yeah.
I mean?
No,
that's what's neat to me. Mm-hmm.
I have two memories that are coming to mind, and then I'll let you go. So I know you want to get to the beach with the family. So I think, you know, one was at Kansas State, and Baylor got off to a really big lead. You know, Jared Butler was playing incredible early on, and then the momentum mm-hmm. kind of started to swing a little bit. And I don't remember exactly when this happened in the game, but Vital grabbed an offensive rebound and immediately fired it out, you know, to a 3-point shooter. I don't even remember who hit the shot, mm-hmm. but that seemed to me like, you know, kind of a demoralizer for Kansas State, and, you know, kind of mm-hmm. took wind out of their sails. That was one memory that comes to mind. The second was I went to Oklahoma, and I think you were at that game also at Oklahoma, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I remember, like, you know, the game was only like 6 or 7 point, you know, lead, but Oklahoma was starting to chip away a little bit, and there was this offensive rebound where he just, you know, had a put back dunk, you know, and that was another one that just kind of broke the back of the Sooners. There,
yeah,
like,
I remember that.
I mean,
I remember that.
Those kind of plays just, you know, just really demoralize the opponent, and yeah. As a fan of a team, there's nothing you like more than seeing the opponent demoralized.
I can remember sitting. We were sitting pretty close together at Texas Tech this year. Yep. I was on press row, and you had some pretty good seats. And I can remember him getting a lot of those offensive rebounds in that game, and firing out to Bandu or whoever it was for some key baskets late in that game. I mean, you're right. I mean, those plays just deflate you if you're an opponent. The other thing I like about Vital, and I was, you know, one thing I hated about the pandemic and missing that tournament is I had a really good story I was about to write on him, just kind of his life, and we're saving that for, you know, when it gets a little closer to the season. But he's just a really good story, man. I mean, you know, he's young from bad backgrounds, and, you know, broken homes and bad neighborhoods, and, you know, he falls right in line with that, maybe to more of an extreme than you would get with a lot of players. But and you know, you can I'll save most of it for the story, but I mean, basically the kid was just in a terrible neighborhood, friends getting killed right and left, and one comes along, and an AAU coach comes along and kind of rescues him and brings him up to Dallas for the last year or two of his high school career, and really, you know, kind of saves him, I think, you know what I mean, and puts him in a better environment where he could train and take basketball more seriously. And You know, by that point he had committed to Baylor. He committed to Baylor when he was down in Louisiana. But again, he was still very, very raw and undisciplined. I think they just saw some extreme athleticism in him. But to kind of be to have him whisked away basically from a really bad environment and brought up to Dallas for the end of his high school career, I think really kind of changed his life. And then going to Baylor just enhanced that path and that change. You know, and even at Baylor, I mean, his first year there, the coaches were saying, like, you know, he could barely speak to anyone because he just always felt like people are out to get him. You know what I mean? Like, he never trusted anyone. He never, just to be frank, he had never really been around a lot of white people before, you know, and just didn't know how to handle that. Just thought he was being looked at. And it was Wainwright that said, Mark, you know, like, chill. Like, everyone likes you here.
Right.
Like, you know, no one's out to get you, you know, no one's out to hurt you. You know, you're our family, you know, and it took him a while to just kind of put his guard down as a person and accept people and be open. And then, you know, fast forward 3 years later, he's getting baptized.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are the kind of stories. That's why I got into sports writing, is for stories like that. I mean, I love the X's and O's, but I like people's stories. And he's a really good one. So looking forward to writing that one here in a few months.
Yeah, I told this story on other podcasts, but it bears repeating. I was in Italy with the team last summer, and, you know, there was a moment where we just had dinner, And, you know, Coach Drew normally, like before games, he'll collect cell phones, especially when they're on the road, and he'll set a curfew. And so, you know, he like as we were breaking up, you know, Coach Drew had said some things to the guys, and then all of a sudden Mark stands up and says, Coach Drew, are you going to have curfew tonight? And all the other players are like looking at him like, dude, like he's trolling his teammates, right? And Coach Drew's like, oh, yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, let's make it 1 a.m. or, you know, whenever it was. And then, you know, as everybody's like rolling their eyes, he goes, collecting cell phones tonight? And Coach Drew's like, nah, I'm going to let you keep your cell phones. And I remember looking over at Davion Mitchell, and Davion Mitchell's like looking at him like, what are you doing? You know, and he's laughing. Right. Like, it was pretty funny. It just shows like his, you know, sense of humor and the camaraderie in the team was really good. But,
that's what I love about this team, man. All these kids are different, but they've all got their own unique story, and they all just kind of come together and blend together so well. It's a neat thing to watch, and it makes you really root for their success even more once you get to know them a little bit as people.
No doubt. Well, hey, thanks for doing this. We're going to do Tristan Clark and Macy O'Teague later in the week, and then we'll focus on the juniors next week. But you've been listening to a Sikkim 365 podcast with Ashley Hodge and Jason King, Sikkim Bears.